week's Shir Parshas Vayikra. Lili Nishmas Yaakov Yitzchak Ben Chaim, sponsored by the Wine Blast. The first word, not actually the first word, but the first word of the Sedra, Vayikra El Moshe. The Aleph is small. If you're looking to say for Torah, the letter Aleph is written tiny. So there's a Midrash, the Kli Yakar brings, the Midrash Yalkut, that explains the reason why the Aleph is small is since it's a remez to the idea that Ketani, children, they begin learning, when they begin to learn Chumash, they should read the learn the Chumash Vayikra first.
Excuse me.
Therefore, the Aleph is small. The Aleph represents as the first letter of the alphabet, so it's referring to the beginning. And it's small to represent children. So when a child begins his learning, Parshas Vayikra. And why Parshas Vayikra? So the reason is, Ma korbanos tahorim, afatinokes ke. Just like the, or in other words, they say that it's those that are tahor, children, which are sweet and innocent, they are tahor, so they should begin learning the Vayikra, which deals with korbanos, etc., things that are tahorim. However, the Parnas Yosef brings another reason, and he says, interesting, that why should kids start learning from Vayikra? In order that they should realize that just like sacrifices, you know, Vayikra is dealing with sacrifices, that sometimes a Yid has to sacrifice for his Yiddishkeit. Not every time things go smoothly. Sometimes you have to say makriv, you have to moser nefesh. A Yid has to do that sometimes. And therefore, the first thing the kid learns is about sacrifices. So that you should realize that a Yid has to sacrifice for his Yiddishkeit. However, even though that's the case, that one has to sometimes sacrifice, but even when he's sacrificing, Lamaisa, Kadosh Baruch Hu gives him back in kind. And the more the person sacrifices for Hashem, Hashem in turn gives him back. It's from this week's Seder, also the Ben Ish Chai, he says, and he gives the mashal, there's once a guy who goes into a store to buy a mirror. And the owner says, oh, I have a beautiful mirror for you. So he brings this nice fancy mirror, he goes out in front of him, says, hey, what do you say? He looks at it and he goes, no, don't like it. I want something else. He says, something else? What's wrong? It's a nice mirror. So he says, the frame is okay and everything. He says, but the image in the mirror, it's terrible, dirty, filthy, ugh, disgusting. So the owner said, excuse me, you shoite. He says, that's you you're looking at in the mirror. So if you straighten yourself up, then the mirror will be good, awesome. So too, people sometimes, you know, the matzah, the bad matzah, whatever. He said, yeah, because the Kodesh Baruch Hu is just giving you back, reflecting. So they'd say, the Psalms say that from the pasuk, Hashem tzilcha yad yaminecha. The Kodesh Baruch Hu, Hashem tzilcha is like a tzail. What's a tzail? A shadow. You know, the shadow moves with you. You move, the shadow moves in kind. So too, Kodesh Baruch Hu acts the same way. You do good, Hashem acts in kind good. You do bad, so too, Kodesh Baruch Hu. They also darshan from the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. It says, Da ma'ala ma'ala mimcha. Simply read, Pashup Shad, is a person should know, Da ma'ala ma'ala mimcha, what is above you. However, you could read it, put the comma in a different place, and read it, Da ma'ala ma'ala mimcha. Right? You should know that what's going on in Shemayim, how what they're doing, you know, to you here, is mimcha. It's all because of you. You act good, you get it back. So too, therefore, the Chaznish wants a darshan and the pasuk in this week said, Adam ki yakriv mikem karban lashem. And he says, Adam ki yakriv, a person wants lashem kirva, closeness. A person wants to achieve this closest to Kodesh Baruch Hu, Adam ki yakriv, then mikem, it's from you. And he asks, the word is extra. Can you say that? Adam ki yakriv karban lashem. Why do you say Adam ki yakriv mikem karban? What's it mikem? From you. It's to tell us that Adam ki yakriv, you want to get close to Kodesh Baruch Hu, mikem, it's from you. You act good, then the Kodesh Baruch Hu will. And therefore, Adam ki yakriv, it's from you, and then Korban Lashem, then a Kodesh Baruch Hu If you want to get close and you act properly, then Karban Lashem, a Kadosh Baruch Hu, will in kind reciprocate with his kirbah towards you. There's a story that Rav Shalom Shvadron brings out in his Haggadah, which we see this idea of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, you know, giving back and reciprocating. There's once a fellow, his name was Rav Rafar. And he had a business selling schnapps, whiskey, etc. And he was doing very well in his business. His business was prospering. And as a result, it led to jealousy. So his main clientele were, you know, the goyim. They liked to drink. And they loved his stuff. And he was doing really well. And there is a komer, a priest, who was saw how successful Rafal was, so he wanted to try whatever he could to, you know, do him in. He's thinking, what can he do? So he had an idea one day of how he can. He thought maybe he'll try to convince the goyim not to buy from him, and therefore he'll go bankrupt. So he tried that, but it didn't work because the goyim they loved the stuff; they were going back to him. So they had another. He had another idea. He waited till Erev Pesach. He knew that Rav Rafal would go to this goy to sell his chametz, and his chametz was quite a bit because he had all this, you know, whiskey stuff in his store, and he would always, you know, sell the whiskey to this goy and close up the shop, you know, for Pesach. So here it is, Erev Pesach, and Rafal goes to the goy and says, "Okay, I want to sell your chametz." But what happened? This comer, this priest, was right there. And he runs up to the goy. He says, "Don't sell it to him." And he tries, and he convinces him not to sell. Don't buy from me. Don't buy the chametz. Don't buy. So he says, "Why not?" No. He convinces the goy not to buy the chametz from him. So Rafal says, "Uh oh, you know, I gotta sell my chametz." So he goes to another goy. You know, it doesn't need to be this guy. He goes to another one. But again, the priest was following him around. Wherever any goy went to, he said, "Don't sell the chametz. Don't sell the chametz." And he couldn't. Wherever he turned. And it was getting later and later, until it got so late that he saw, even if he found somebody now, he's not going to have enough time to make a kinyan, and it's going to be past the time he can sell the chametz. So he saw, that's it, he's stuck. And he therefore made an announcement. He said, "All my whiskey in the store, everything is hefker. Hefker." And that's it. He had to, of course, leave the store open, because if he's going to guard the store, it's not called making it hefker, right? So he had to leave the store open. He left the door open to his store of whiskeys, and he went home happy that he was able to do the Ratzon Hashem, even though it meant, you know, a sacrifice. So he went home, and first he didn't say anything, but during the Seder or whatever, he told his wife what happened, how he's able to do kindness. His wife almost fainted. That's how much money it was we give it. Okay, but he said, "No, Baruch Hashem, you know." Okay. So the whole time, you know, he didn't go to the store, it was left open the whole chag. And after the Pesach was over, he says, "Okay, now I'm going to do something, you know, my business here, you know." So he says, "Okay, first things first, I'm going to go straight to my supplier and to buy more schnapps, because I have to, you know, I have nothing there. Everything was taken probably by the goyim." So he goes to the supplier. And he said, "I'd like to make an order." This. The supplier says, "Wait a second. I understand. You weren't here that long ago. You made an order, you know, and you don't usually order so often. Why are you ordering again? You sold everything so fast. What's going on?" So Rafal said, "No, actually," he told him the story, how, you know, he couldn't sell his chametz, and if he had to make it hefker, and for now he... So the man says, the wholesaler says, "Oh, wait a second. That's the case? So I'm not going to sell you." He says, "Why not?" He says, "Look, Rafal," he says, you have a chov, you owe me money from the last shipment, okay? So mele, if you're selling the other stuff, okay, then eventually you'll sell, well, you'll have money to pay me for the new stuff, etc. That's how business works. But you're not going to have any money from what you're selling, because it's gone, it's taken. So you have nothing to pay me back with. And not only that, from what you tell me, you said you left your store open, probably all the stores ransacked, you have to refurbish it and you know, clean it up and buy new casks and now the whole thing. It's going to cost a lot of money. You'll never pay me back, so forget it. I'm not going to give you any more stock." Anyways, now what? And Rafal's wife was there, and she started crying bitterly. She goes, no, now what? We can't buy a new store. What we had is lost. Can't buy anything new. Can't resell anymore. We're in trouble. We have still owe money from the last ship. Anyways, the wholesale fellow looked bad, and he says, okay, stop crying. Let's go to the shop, and let's make a real evaluation, see how much damage was done, see what's this, and we'll make a judgment. Fine. So they go together, and they go to the store, and they see a very strange thing. Just as they approach the store, they see, sitting outside the store, two vicious dogs at the in front of the store. And anybody that walks by, they're barking like crazy. Just a loose dog standing there, barking at people. And so that's strange. And as Ramaphal got closer, you know, with his wife and the guy, all of a sudden the dogs looked at him and ran away. So I said, that's very strange. So a guy from a neighbor over there came up to me and said, you know what? These dogs have been here the whole week. The whole week they were standing outside the store. Anybody comes by, they're barking and So he said, we know you announced that, you know, everything's hefker and everything, but nobody can get near your store. The dog. So sure enough, they go in. Nothing's touched. Everything as it was, all the whiskeys, all the thing. No, nobody got in. The whole chag. The dogs were there. The whole chag. Anyways, his wife is Simcha v'sason. It was like, Ramesh Hashkacha Pratis. Ramesh Baruch protected us. You know, those Ritzunder of Yaseh. She's so happy. But Rafal didn't look so happy. He says, what's wrong? He said, Lo b'shamayim. He says, the Torah is not shamayim. We're protected everything. He says, listen, he says, hey, it was not hefker. And therefore, you know, it was closed. Nobody was able to get to the chametz. So it was not hefker. So mele, it's chametz shavar alav pesach, and it's asur b'hanah. You can't get out of it. You can't sell it. You have to get rid of it. So she says, what? No way, it can't be. There must be some heter, whatever. So she says, wait a second. Okay, I have an idea. Let's go to the Rav. Okay, why should we, you know, make up your own psaki? We'll go to the Rav. See what the Rav says. The Rav says, it's no good. It's good. Whatever he says goes, okay? She says, okay, fair enough. So they go to the Rav. The Rav was Rav Leibish Harif. That's the name. And no pun intended. And so he goes to the, they go to the Rav, and the Rav hears the Shaila back and forth, and he says, under the circumstances, Efshar l'hakel. So give me makel, give me lenient, because it's a loss involved, this, whatever. He says, you can be lenient. So what happened? Rav Rafal said, no. Ani lo mechapes kulot. I'm not here to look for kulas. No. Kula, the Mekel, the Efshalaka, I'm not looking for kulas. He went and he back to the store, he opened up all the spigots, let all the whiskey go to waste, you know, because Asu Mahana, he didn't want to be Mekel, and goodbye. So the Rav Harif, you know, gave him this psak, and he heard what happened, what Rafal did. He says, you know what? This couple, you know, Rafal's wife, they've been married a number of years, they have no children. He says, out of the act that was just done, Ramesh was serious nefesh, you know, he could have been Mekel. I gave him a heter. He didn't rely on a heter or nothing, he wants to be Ramesh. But to me, Mr. Hashem, he says, I'm sure that this year they're going to have a boy that's going to be born to them, that's going to mayor a name Shal Yisrael B'Torah. And sure enough, Chachave, that year they had a boy, and he grew up to be Rav Avram, Mi Chechnov, which was a big tzaddik, who was in fact Meir Neim Shal Yisrael B'Torah. So here we have again Rafal, who was like Moser Nefesh, and that. But Kodesh Baruch Hu, in kind, he did that. But Baruch Hu answered and gave him a boy. I was thinking, you know, we saw the story the first time that, you know, if we would have asked before, if we would have knew what would have happened, let's say we would come to Rafal and tell you what. You know, if you are willing to put down, I don't know how much, let's say whiskey, $10,000 at most, you know, would you be willing to pay $10,000 to have a son? What do you think he would have said? Father, how any money in the world, you know, to have a son, you know? And a tzaddik, yeah, the son's going to be a tzaddik. Okay, and so, yeah, had he been there for? Was it a sacrifice? It was a sacrifice because he didn't know what it was going to be. But if he knew he was going to have a son, he would have given any money to have a son. So you see that in the end, we don't see always the result. But it's a sacrifice. It's not really a sacrifice, like we said, because Hashem Tzilcha, Hashem gives in return. Agav, with this Indian about relying on kulas, recently saw from Rav Nisim Yagenzatzal. He brought a maisa with an avreich kolel who came to the Rav Eliyashiv. What was his shaila? Said he bought tefillin, and the parshas, you know, he had it written, and he paid a lot of money for these parshas. So then, after he received them, I don't know why, but he wanted to check with other rabbanim, see, you know, the quality, maybe show them off. I don't know exactly. So one of the Rav saw them and says, yeah, beautiful, mahudit parshas, very nice. He says, but then I showed them to another Rav, and he looked at them, and he says, they're possible. It's like, possible. He says, how much money I pay for these? He says, possible. So he didn't know what to do, because one Rav says, they're beautiful, they're mahudit. And one says, possible. And he paid a lot of money for them. He didn't know what to do. So he figured, I'll go to Rav Eliyashiv and see what he says. So, he said, told him the story, from this, from that, from that, from that, from that. No, what's the story? So Rav Eliyashiv looks at the parshas, and he says, they're kasher b'di'evit. That was his psak. They're kasher b'di'evit. So the Avreich's like, whew. Well, you know, after paying all that money, you know, I was getting nervous there. You know, Baruch Hashem, they're kasher b'di'evit, thank you. And he's all happy, he's about to leave. And just before he left, Rabbi Yashar stops him and says, wait a second. He says, what, your whole life you're going to live b'di'evit? He says, go buy yourself new parshas. In other words, okay, the kasher b'di'evit, what do you mean you're happy? Okay, great, I'll put out these b'di'evit. You're going to live your whole life putting on b'di'evit fillin? You're going to live your whole life b'di'evit? Right? He again says, it's like a guy, let's say, he's stuck some night at a place in the airport, I don't know, whatever, and he has no place to sleep, so he sleeps on a bench, sleeps on the floor. Okay. He can sleep one night on the floor. Aye, what kind of a bed is that? Okay, but many of it, you know. One night, you know. But every night on the floor? You can't sleep every night on the floor. He says, oh, you have your food got burnt. Okay, so nothing else. It's too late to make something new. Okay, I'll eat the burnt food. Okay, you can eat the burnt food. But you're going to eat burnt food every night. It's ridiculous, okay? One night, that can happen. What? So here, you're going to be putting on tefillin every day, these b'di'evit, you're going to live a b'di'evit life. He said, you got the b'di'evit. He said, go away, yourself a new tefillin. It reminded me of a joke I once heard. I don't remember, it was many years ago. Joke was something like this. It was a guy that's how he lived. He was like, one of these b'di'evit Jews, you know, yotzi zayin, as they say. Okay, I'm some yotzi, that's fine with me. So eventually, he left this world, went to the next world, and he sees that there's a big suda going on there. The sudat of the Leviathan, this great fish, you know, the Hashem salted for the tzaddikim, lasilavo. And here he is at the table with all these tzaddikim, you know, for the suda of the Leviathan. And he's like, wow, this is unbelievable. And everybody's being, these waiters are serving on those fish to all these tzaddikim, right? Anyway, so he's like, waiter, my turn. He goes, yeah, okay, we're coming. So the waiter comes, you know, with the tray and, you know, the cover around the thing, and he's all excited. He has this, you know, bib on, and like for this forward to dig in, or whatever. And the waiter puts the, you know, the plate down, opens up the tray, the cover, and what does he see? A can of tuna. He goes, can of tuna? What's going on over here? So they said, for Yitzizayim. Anyways, another story brings out this idea of Kadosh Baruch Hu's retribution. It says, there's once a fellow, his name was Rav Dunat, and he lived in Haifa, and he was Nifter, and he left a son who was Mamasha Baki and Shas. A young man, younger, right? But Mamasha knew the whole Shas. So they asked the son, and what schus did your father have to have a son like you? And in fact, the other brothers also, they're all Talmidei Chacham, so but this one is extra special, you know, the membership of Shas. So they said, and what's supposed to do your father have to have a son like you and, you know, and your brothers, etc.? So he said, I'll tell you. He said, my father, he was, time goes before the Kuma Medina, before the country was formed, he was living in Haifa. And he was driving a bus. And then the company was called Shachar. And that was the bus company. And he had shares in the company. You know, he owned shares in the company. And he was doing kind of very well, making good, you know, a lot of money, because he had, you know, he owned part of the company and driving the bus, whatever. He's doing very well, very nice. And as far as the family, even at a time when people were not doing so well at that time, you know, in the country, in those early years, but he was doing very well. Anyways, what happened? This company, Shachar, went and conglomerated with Eged, as we know today. Now, Eged, though, they would drive on Shabbos, especially in Haifa. I don't know, I remember even maybe still till today, there's buses in Haifa on Shabbos, even though nowhere else, there were no buses, but I know still today, I remember years ago that was the case. Anyway, so they joined up with the Eged together, became a conglomerate. And but Eged was worked on Shabbos, Rechal Shabbos. So he had a shaila: is it okay to have share, you know, to be part of an owner of a company that's Michal Shabbos? So he didn't know. He went to ask his Rav, which was Rav Klein, who lived in Haifa. Asked him a shaila. So Rav Klein said, this is a little bit too much for me. You know, it's very big. It's talking about his life. You know, where's I know? Telling I know. I mean, he's out on the street. And from, you know, so dealing the fascists here. So he didn't want to take the responsibility. He says, listen, I don't want to take responsibility. Go to the Chazon Ish. Ask him whatever he says. He says, I'll even write out the Shaila for you. You know, exactly the study of everything properly. Whatever you like to go to the Chazon Ish, show him this paper. Let him read the Shaila and give me an answer. He says, fine. So he said, my father went to the Chazon Ish, went to Benebra, handed him the paper. Chazon Ish looks at the Shaila, and he lifts up his head and he says, Asim. He says, what did my father do? He didn't try to, he said, you know, look for kula and say, b'chozo, there's some way, I get that. No, nothing, no questions asked. He didn't even go home. He went straight from the Chazon Ish, he said, directly to the bus company, to the offices. And he comes in, he says, I want to sell my shares. That's it. Quick. Sell my shares in the company, the margin. And that's what he did right on the spot before he even went home. Before, I guess, he didn't want the HR to, you know, and make him change his mind. You know, he got suck. And he went and he sold everything. From that day on, you can imagine it was like, that was his source of parnasa. Living was gone. And he had a very, very hard life, you know, parnasa-wise from that day on. And he started selling soaps, and he was like carrying these soaps and perfumes or whatever in a bag over his shoulder. He used to schlep from house to house with his heavy sack on his back selling these things. That's what he had to do. After being, you know, a wealthy man, he said, "This had to, you know, sell these things." Eventually got some retribution money from the Germans, and he bought like an old rundown bus, and he would like sell, now at least wouldn't have to hold it on his back, and he would go driving around selling this stuff. And then when he got older and he couldn't do this anymore, he was working as a caretaker in a yeshiva in Haifa. And Mekitzer, his whole life was, from that point on, was just, you know, financially was very difficult. One day, he was walking by near the yeshiva there where he's working. There was a whole complex of beautiful, beautiful, fancy villas, like homes. And these were owned by the shareholders, the pensionary people that had pensioned from the bus company. People they used to work with when he was in Shachar Eged, whatever, before, you know, he sold out. That these are, you know, so he bumps into one of the guys and says, how you doing, whatever. And he says, so he turned to Rav Duna and he said, and this guy, he says, look what you gave up. Look, you know, what a pension we're getting now, you know, from the bus company, and look at this beautiful house, my fancy car, the swimming pool, whatever it is, you know, the whole works. And goes, and you, look what you get out of it. Look what you got, nothing, and it's been, a difficult life here, a whole time since you sold. Why'd you do that, you know, what'd you get out of it? Anyway, so he said, you know, my father commented, he said afterwards, he says, what does this guy mean, what do I get out of it? What does he get? A house, a car? I have a son, and that's all the chacham. There are sons that are talking to chachamim. What did I get out of it? I got a lot out of it. I got more than he got out of it. And I got his sons are talking to chachamim. So too, once again, it's the person being sacrificing and making that step towards the Kodesh Baruch Hu is makrib, and in the end, the Kodesh Baruch Hu answers back. So one last story. The same Indian, that there was once a yid. I saw this in the Sefer Barchi Nafshi, brings the name of Rav Nachman Seltzer actually. And there was once a yid, and he was an American. He was traveling from Israel to America, and he's sitting on the plane, and he sees next to him this guy, and he sees him getting food, you know, on the plane. And it saw the name tag, it said Mr. Weinstein, you know, on the thing. So obviously another yid, but he didn't look, he wasn't from it, I was very keeper, nothing, you know. And he couldn't help but notice the guy I was eating was like treifus. And he was like, you know, he felt he had to say something, and he said, excuse me, you know, you're Jewish, right? He goes, yeah. And he says, well, okay. He says, I'm not makpid, you know, I eat treifus, whatever. He says, you know, why you have to? You can get kosher food. Why would you eat treifus? So he says, listen, he says, I was, I'll tell you what happened. He says, I was in the concentration camp. Okay? I lost my wife and this, my family. All I had left was one son. And his name was Katriel Menachem. And that's all I had. It was just me and my son, Katriel. And, you know, trying to get through in the concentration camp, you know, was, of course, difficult. And one day, they take my son away from me, and they line him up, and in front of my eyes, they shot him. And he said, from that moment on, I couldn't anymore like that. I lost all my emuna, and that was it. And since then, I, you know, went downhill, and I won't keep anything anymore. Anyway, when this when he heard this, he was like, well, you know, okay, I'm not going to talk anymore, and he just didn't say anything anymore. And that was the end of that. So fine. And then that was the end of the trip, and he never, you know, didn't see him again. 4 years later, this yid from America was visiting Eretz Yisrael for the Chagim or whatever, Shana Yom Kippur. And it was Yom Kippur. He was dubbing the shul in Yirmiyah Sharim. And yeah, for some reason, he had to go out and get something from where he was staying, whatever. So he goes out of the shul. And just as he's like walking down the street, he sees like a bench on the side of the road, and an old man sitting there on the bench smoking on Yom Kippur. Okay, and he's smoking. So it's like, whoa, you know, it hit him. And as he's approaching, like passing this guy, he looks at him, and he got a real shock. He said, it was the same yid, this Mr. Weinstein, that he met on the plane, you know. So he thought to himself, you know, the fact that I bumped into this guy here, just like that, I happen to leave and see him here on the street. It must mean that I'm supposed to do something, you know. So he walks over to him and he says, remember me? And he says, yeah, I'm familiar. He says, I sat next to you on the plane and he goes, oh, this. He goes, oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, so he said, he wanted to get to him something. How can he get to him a little bit? You know, Kippur, you know. So he said, you know what? Said Mr. Weinstein, any minute now, they're going to start in the shul to say Yizkor. Okay? So, you mentioned, you know, that your son was killed, you know, by the Nazis, Yerushalayim, and this country, Yom Menachem, whatever. And wouldn't it be nice, why don't you go into shul, you know, put out your cigarette, drop your cigarette, go into shul, and tell the chazan your son's name, and he'll daven for him, and be an alien neshama. Why don't you do that? So he broke down, he started crying, he started hugging, and whatever. He says, you know what? Okay, I'm going to do it. So he's going to go into shul. He hadn't been in shul in years, you know. He was smoking a yukib. He says, okay, I'm going to do it, I'm going to go in. So he says, wonderful. So he takes him in, and he ushers him in to the thing, and he comes down for Yizkor. So the chazan is taking names, you know, saying Kamali, whatever. So Mr. Weinstein walks up to the chazan. Chazan says, okay, what's your name? And he says the name of the Navy you want to give. So he says, Katriel Menachem ben Yecheskel Shraga. So all of a sudden, the chazan looks up, he turns white, and he says, Abba! And he faints. So what happened? It was his son. He didn't realize. What happened was, he thought his son was killed, so I was shocked. He didn't die. And they showed who he survived, then he survived the war. And he thought, the whole time he was living, thinking his son was dead, but he was not, he was alive the whole time. And he would never have known it had he not walked into shul and made that first step and, you know, and do it and come into the shul and make, that's how he made up my name after his father. You can imagine, to hear his son, and his son's a firm guy, you know, the Meir Shaira, the children, whatever, and he had all these grandchildren now. And it was unbelievable. Eventually, this fellow, this Mr. Weinstein, Mamish was Chozer Betshuva, and he Mamish lived a, lived a life like a kosher yid, and the rest of his life. So again, this person making that step, that, you know, putting in the effort, doing something, makri, even something, and the Chazal Baruch Hu answers. So it's Rav Hashem, we should take to heart this lesson, Hashem Tzilcha, Yad Yiminecha, that the Chazal Baruch Hu follows suit, you make the step, Kodesh Baruch Hu answers. But the Hashem, you should make all the right steps in life, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu should answer us with the Iker answer of seeing the coming of Bias Kol Tzedek in here in Yemen.